today, Dave and I are talking about Peter, the man of God, and his incredible connection with God's story.
Yes, we do the series on men of God from the scriptures, and we'll be doing a woman of God one later too, so don't feel like we're slighting anybody at all, but there's something that we have that's kind of an added thing that you can check out. If you're taken with the idea of being a man of God or a woman of God, go to manofgodnexus.com. There's some good resources, free resources for you or someone you know who is pursuing a life as a man after God's own heart. It's not a huge site, but there's enough there that can encourage you. And as we talk about Peter today and consider the principles of a man of God, think about yourself and who you are.
It's manofgodnexus, N-E-X-U-S. manofgodnexus.com.
Well, thanks for clarifying that. Hey, I call Peter a man of real faith, and it's dynamic faith. I love his imperfections, and I love the perfections of God that flow through him. He's just a beautiful example.
Well, and you and I were talking about this just before we started, and I got teary-eyed because I said, he is so, he's so full of zeal and youth and ignorance and naivete as he begins with Jesus, because he asks dumb questions, but he just, whatever he's thinking, he kind of jumps ahead with it and then has to kind of go, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said
quite
like that.
No matter what his level of knowledge, he was all in all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And that was beautiful, because it wasn't just a zeal. That was a human zeal. It was there, but God shaped that.
And then it's almost like after Christ was crucified and ascended, it all culminates to make Peter this rock, this immovable man who spreads the word and is so solid in the church. And it's just like, you read it and I forget. Sometimes when I'm reading the real solid part, I forget that he jumped in a lake to walk on water.
Well, let's talk about a few of those things. That's the first one that came to mind in Matthew 14, the water walk, where, and a lot of these out of Matthew that I looked at and made my list today in preparation. But what would that take? I mean, you're a fisherman. And you get it. You understand it. And this is not like a shallow lake where you can touch in some places. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like a big bowl and it's deep.
You know, whether you are a fisherman or not a fisherman, you know that when you get in the water, you sink. That you don't walk, for sure. You might know how to swim, but you don't walk on it. And that he goes, Jesus says to come to him, and he just does it.
And who asked that kind of question?
You know?
Can I come to you on the water? I would have been going, I'm going to wait till he gets to the boat.
But then it's almost as though in the same moment he steps out and doubt immediately hits him.
Yeah. And isn't that just really like
the
life of faith? Because once the water hits your feet, I mean, you're already in a tough spot because you're in the boat. You're looking at Jesus walking on the water and you're going, whoa, something amazing's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
Your emotions carry you out into the water, and then all of a sudden you start sinking.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what a beautiful picture of faith, and what a real picture of faith.
Very real. The fact that doubt sets in just because we're human, and also doubt sets in because Satan will never let your faith go untested.
You almost sense that Peter spent all those first year or two that he was following Jesus just watching what was going on and responding and reacting. And as things unfold, he just matures and he grows. But he has a lot of things to go through between this water walk and the book of Acts.
Well, yeah, and some of the things I enjoy are things that I find in my own life. I say things that are a bit humiliating or whatever, and you realize, yeah, Peter was there too. It didn't mean he wasn't a man of God. He just lived his life out loud.
Well, and he didn't give up, which is one of the things that I really appreciate about Peter. I think in Matthew 16 then, he gets that crushing rebuke from Jesus because, you know, he tells Jesus the way he thinks things are going to happen. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan.
You know, and that's what I'm talking about.
Seeking God's interest, but your own.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. He says things sometimes that end up, you discover how naive they were, and it's humiliating that, oh man, I had such a small picture.
Maybe that's
I knew.
Maybe that's why he didn't get his own gospel. I mean, it took him a while to work through his feelings about what had happened. Well, you know, you had that situation. And then just like a chapter later in Matthew 17, they're on the mountain And, you know, and they see transfigured before them, you know, Elijah and Moses and Jesus. And they're like above the ground in front of them.
As though they become light from the inside out, they become transfigured. And Peter, again, not really understanding what's going on.
Well, how would you?
I agree. How would you? But, you know, his first response is, let's build three little buildings for these people.
Little huts.
You know, but then when he realizes, when Jesus turns to him, then he falls on his face because he recognizes and he worships, but it's also in fear.
So you see, you know, Peter is just kind of woven into the experiences of Christ. He has a lot of years of watching, you know, a couple of years of watching. Mm-hmm. And then when things really start ramping up, Peter is right in the middle of all of it. And the next thing that happens is in Matthew 18, when they ask him, the disciples ask him a question about forgiveness. And Peter says, should I forgive somebody up to seven times?
I mean, really? Should I forgive up to seven times? And Jesus' response?
Yeah, seven times 70. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what you've learned about that, but in the times when I've been the most wronged, I've had to appropriate all 490 times.
Sure.
When I feel like I've been betrayed by somebody. And so Jesus really understood the essence of it. You know, Peter was trying to understand the depth of it, thought he was being incredibly generous.
Generous.
Yeah, when he said up to seven times. And Jesus just blows that out of the water and explains so many things to Peter that Peter is trying to understand from a human perspective. Mm-hmm. Here you are. He's so zealous, but his knowledge can't keep up with his zeal because he's not seeing the things that he's seeing now as he's walking with Jesus.
And I love it, but he asks the kinds of questions that I ask, and he gives me the nerve to ask them directly to Jesus. Like, he gives me the nerve to say, it's okay, I don't need to hide this question. If he could ask it,
yeah,
I can ask it.
Well, yeah, that's one of the beautiful things about Peter, because when you have that kind of zeal and your heart moves in that kind of direction, well, it gives you hope to see that in your faith walk, God is going to get you where Peter ended up.
Mm-hmm.
The next situation, and these kind of happen in Matthew 26, but he has this bravado about not backing down.
Oh, yeah.
I'll die before I deny you. And so this is beginning to set up the final crushing conflict for the inner man of Peter. I mean, this.
And once again, he's saying something he doesn't understand the weight of.
No, he doesn't. I mean, and from a human perspective, mm-hmm. it makes sense. Well, yeah, of course, I'm going to be there. And, you know, he's the, I think the next thing that happened a little bit later is the incident with the ear. But, you know, he's all in, but he's not understanding the spiritual ramifications of the things that are going on around him. And how many times have I felt that in my life? You know, I'm pretty brave. I'm pretty proactive. I'm really ready to walk into the fire if I need to walk into the fire. But it's not just about that. It's about walking where you walk with God and having God be the power and the authority that's behind you.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. So then you have the sleeping debacle. And, you know, they all fall asleep, and Jesus, you know, asks them to hang out there while he's praying to the Father. He's alone.
Yes, the disciples are with him, but then he pulls Peter, James, and John just a little further into the garden with him, and then he goes in a little further. He prays, he comes back, and at one point, he wakes those three up and says, couldn't you stay awake? But interestingly, he speaks directly to Peter when he says, you know, about staying awake because of is because of temptation.
Mm-hmm.
He says that directly to Peter. I mean, to everybody, but he looks at Peter and says it to him.
Well, this, you know, some people, when you look at your walk with God, there's the whole idea of things being a setup.
Mm-hmm.
This was a setup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a setup not to cause Peter to fail, but to
strengthen him.
And to turn him into somebody he could not be on his own. And and you think about what it would be like to be in the inner circle. Remember when they had that conversation about who's the greatest?
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of toward the end.
Uh-huh.
And so they're having that conversation. But, you know, when you're when you're Peter or James or John, and when Jesus draws aside and he took them in the garden to pray with him and to be with him as he was praying to the Father, that would have a real impact on you if you were in the inner circle of Jesus.
You would think, yes.
Yeah. And think about the principles that are there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you know God, when you draw close to God, when you sense him in your life, spiritual humility is sometimes not easy to experience.
Amen.
And then also, then the next thing that happens is he cuts off Malchus's ear, the slave of the high priest. I mean, what's the deal with that? Mm-hmm. And Jesus says, you know, put it away, you know, and what does Jesus do? Do you remember?
Oh, he heals him.
Yeah. Can you, now think about it. I don't know if his ear was hanging, you know, by the lobe.
Yeah.
Or if somebody had to pick it up from the dirt and wipe it off. I don't know. But Jesus touches his ear.
And heals
and
it.
And heals him. Think about everybody.
Being that guy, all the people that saw it.
I don't know how you cut an ear off and not have there be evidence, mm-hmm. you know, like blood evidence,
right.
and screaming evidence, uh-huh. you know, all the different, can you imagine the emotion of that situation? And then Jesus.
And all the things that aren't said in that story, you have to just imagine them.
How did it happen? And mm-hmm. what did that look like? And did he just make a new ear or did he pick up the old ear and reattach it? You know,
we don't know.
We don't. That leads then into the denial around the fire. And, you know, that is one of the most chilling passages of the scripture for me is when I see that unfolding. And I've seen a couple of renditions of that, like in the Passion of the Christ and whatever. And it chills me to my soul to think about Peter and his heart and what was happening to mm-hmm. him.
Just after all this sort of bravado saying, Jesus, I would never deny you. I would always stand with you. And here he is denying Christ to two different servant girls that say, aren't you? I can tell by your language. I can tell. I remember seeing you with him. Nope, it wasn't me. Nope, wasn't me.
Well, and to top it all off, Jesus said before the rooster crows.
Yes.
The rooster crows.
Yeah.
You know, and can you imagine what's going on inside of Peter right now? He must feel like an incredible failure. He must feel like he's a chicken, you mm-hmm. know, and here he is going mm-hmm. through one of the biggest struggles of his spiritual life, particularly, I think, since he has been following Jesus. So then they end up over on the side of the lake, the Sea of Galilee, after the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And can you imagine that? I mean, the stage there.
Well, the sweetness of this is very moving in the sense, and we've talked about this before, but it's very moving in the sense that they recognize him. They jump out. Peter jumps out of the boat. Again, kind of the first one. Isn't that Peter? I have that mm-hmm. right, don't I?
Yep.
And he jumps out. He knows it's Jesus. And, you know, they all come on shore. He's fixing breakfast or lunch for them, whatever. And he says to Peter three different times, feed my sheep. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. Do you love me? He does it three times, almost in response to the three times that Peter denied Jesus, and working deeper and deeper into his heart to heal him from the wound of denying Jesus.
And even while you're talking about it right now, I almost cry when I think when Peter said, well, Lord, you know everything. You know.
Yeah.
You know that I love you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what an emotional interaction between a follower who had mm-hmm. let down completely. He mm-hmm. had blown it completely. And here's Jesus drawing him beyond that mm-hmm. and asking him to go to places where he couldn't go by himself.
And plus, you also have the other disciples watching that.
Yes.
And they're learning what it's like to offer forgiveness and to receive forgiveness and to receive deep, deep healing from wounds.
And that leads us to the book of Acts. And I wrote down, Katie bar the door. I mean, he never looks back. Peter never looks back. It doesn't mean he's perfect. He mm-hmm. still continues to make errors and judgment, but he is so filled with the strength of God as he goes
forward.
Such
conviction. And it's not a naive conviction at this point. He has been through a lot, and his conviction and the rock that he is for the future church is just incredible.
In what ways are you a Peter? Commitment, resilience, tenacity, courage, teachability, those are all questions
mm-hmm.
that I ask myself.